Welcome to Couch Buddies. I'm Kia.
I'm Michelle.
And today we are talking about one of my absolute favorite movies. We are talking about Barefoot in the Park.
Barefoot in the Park was made in 1967. It stars Robert Redford, Jane Fonda, and Charles Boyer.
Charles Boyer!
It has a 7 out of 10 on IMDb.
Agreeable.
And
I'm happy
83%
with
that. On Rotten Tomatoes.
That makes me even happier.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, the Rotten Tomatoes score is based more on more recent reviews.
Yeah.
I think there's one from 67, and I'm not even entirely sure it's from 67.
Right. It's hard to have a Rotten Tomatoes score for these older ones and, like, essentially trying to, like, backdate
the score.
Well,
these are actual critical websites that do classic films.
Yes.
So.
That's a good point. Very quickly, the synopsis of the movie, for those who haven't seen it, is Paul, a conservative young lawyer, marries the vivacious Corey. Their highly passionate relationship descends into comical discord in a five-flight New York City walk-up apartment.
Now, this is the third of five movies that Robert Redford and Jane Fonda did together.
Yes.
Or have done. The most recent was just in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Our Souls at Night, which is on our list.
But it's, so we had Tall Story, The Chase, Barefoot in the Park, The Electric Horseman, which was 79, and then...
I've never seen it. Like, this is the only movie of theirs I've... Like, the only movie of theirs I've seen. But while we were, you know, fiddling around on IMDb before the record, I saw the poster for that one. Based on the poster, it looks ridiculous, and I have to see it.
It looks like a very 70s movie, based on the poster. But then, of course, Our Souls at Night is the last one in 2017.
Yes.
But... I'd never seen this movie. I loved it, but I had never seen it.
I'm so happy that I watched it with you, because before we hit play, I didn't know that you didn't know anything about the movie. I was completely unaware of that.
Yeah, I went into it fully, completely not knowing even what it was about, and that was kind of on purpose, just nature of things. It's easier sometimes to not know what to expect in something like this. So I think part of me, because like there was like a Barbara Streisand marathon on something the other night.
Right.
And so like part of me was like prepared for like The Way We Were type movie
or a love story. Yeah.
As not what this is at all.
That,
like, comedy.
It's not that.
So funny.
Because, and to give a little bit of background, this movie, it's based on it's Neil Simon's script. It's he did the screenplay, but he also wrote the play that this is based on. Neil Simon is the man behind one of my other favorite movies, Murder by Death, which is a not satire, parody. That's the word I was looking for. It's a parody of all of like the old like detective movies. Everything else I've ever seen of the man, like he's also the man behind The Odd Couple and The Out of Towners, The Heartbreak Kid, Sunshine Boys, Goodbye Girl, Plaza Suite and California Suite, Max Dugan Returns, Brighton Beach Memoirs, Biloxi Blues. Like, the man is so good at having, like, everything he does has some little, like, quirk. Like everything is quirky. But it's also, like, it's also so funny, but in, like, a very real way.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's very relatable for sure.
Yes, but
even though it's a couple in 1967, I was sitting there going, oh yeah, that's real familiar.
Oh yeah. And I have to say, like, I loved, because I was, you know, I thought, like, because I have talked about this before, like, maybe you had some sort of preconceived notion of it, or, like, you maybe knew something. But yeah, watching this with you today and you not knowing anything about it going in, it made my day. Like, just to see, like, you actually, like, doubled over laughing in places, like, oh, it did my heart good.
It was great.
But I was actually looking at some of the stuff about this movie before we started watching, just so I could, like, jot down a couple of notes. And I saw where somebody had a quote from a tweet of Jane Fonda's, where she said that this is actually one of her favorite movies that she's ever done. And that she kind of wishes that, like, Neil Simon had written a sequel. Just, like, can you imagine that couple after 40 years?
That's the Netflix sequel we should have gotten.
Exactly.
Because we're going to watch Our Souls at Night, the two of us are.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to be a lot different.
It's Yeah.
But even in the trailer on that, they're so cute together.
They are.
There is a palpable chemistry between the two of them.
There really, really is. And I had seen, I don't know why, but there's somebody that I follow on Tumblr who, like, one day I logged on and my entire dash was filled with nothing but Barefoot in the Park gifts. And I was like, what have I done for this bountiful blessing? This is great. And somebody that I follow, like, she had finally seen the movie for the first time. Mm-hmm. And she's a huge Jane Fonda fan. And so, like, I see nothing but Grace and Frankie from her, like, all year round.
Which Grace and Frankie's an amazing show.
It's so good. And I want Robert Redford on it.
It'd be so great.
But they,
they would fit, he would fit
so well. Oh my god! It would be great.
Now that they made this movie, maybe she'll drag him by the ear.
Maybe. It'd be great. But this person that I follow on Tumblr, she had gone into, like, a huge, like, deep dive over this movie. And so, for days, I was just seeing all these posts about it. And I wish I could have found it, because, like, I actually kind of went back and looked for it. But she had part of, like, an interview, like, with Jane Fonda. I think it was talking about, like, Our Souls at Night. It was some press for that. And Jane Fonda talking about how, like, one of her favorite things in the world is, like, romantic scenes with Robert Redford. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Just like, and rewatching this movie, I was like, I can understand why.
Well, yeah.
It's like, I absolutely get it. But it's just, you're going to hear this phrase from me a lot during this recording, which is just, I love this movie.
It was really funny. It was so much funnier than I anticipated. Granted, I didn't anticipate anything.
Right.
So.
Well, I remember, like, when I first saw this movie, I was in high school, and TCM was essentially, they were having a Neil Simon day. Mm-hmm. And so I caught the tail end of Murder by Death and just kind of stuck around, which Murder by Death, if you can find it, it's freaking hysterical. Mm-hmm. But, like, I've been watching.
It's very comparative to Clue.
Yes. It's Clue way before there was
way
Clue.
Way before there was Clue. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just for the people who haven't seen it, they're listening. It's very comparative to Clue. Except for there are some jokes that if you haven't seen some older movies,
yeah,
you don't always grab right. all the jokes, but it's still, I mean, you have the...
you have parody versions yeah, of Miss Marple and Poirot, the Thin Man,
yeah.
Charlie Chan, and then what's his name? Sam Spade.
Yeah.
Which is Humphrey Bogart's
character.
It's
just so funny. Not to go too off yeah, topic, but it's super funny.
Yeah, so, like, I grew up in that movie. Like, my dad, like, trained me early, like, watching yeah. that movie. And so, when I caught the end of that, I was like, and, you know, they came up with, like, the interstitial, like, oh, or Neil Simon. It's like, why not? I'm just going to see what else. And, like, over the course of that, I watched The Goodbye Girl and, like, immediately fell in love with that. I watched Plaza Suite and California Suite, which Maggie Smith is in California Suite.
She's amazing.
She and Michael Caine are married and they hate each other and it's amazing.
Someday we need to do a discussion on here of our favorite older women actors, because we've had
absolutely.
This discussion between the two of us, like, off mic, but one of our favorites is Maggie.
Oh,
like, absolutely. Maggie Smith is on.
Well, and
my sister and I were talking about Sister Act just today, and I said something about Maggie Smith, and she was like, I love her. Like, it was great.
I was literally telling my mother the other day that when I was home last Thanksgiving, that I don't know what channel it was, but they were running essentially back-to-back-to-back marathons of The Birdcage, Sister Act 1, and Sister Act 2, and they would repeat. And so all weekend long, that's all I watched. And I was telling her, I literally told my mom, it's like, I need more Whoopi Goldberg movies and Maggie Smith movies, which is way off topic.
But anyway,
but like I said, during the run of all these Neil Simon movies, Barefoot in the Park came on. I was like, okay, I've never heard anything about this movie. It's like, but Robert Redford, absolutely, I'm going to stick around and watch it.
Take my money.
Yes. And so, I remember sitting on my bed in my room and, like, watching this movie and just, like, gasping for air. I was laughing so hard. And I immediately fell in love with it. And, like, to the point, when we were in college, and I was in the process of writing, I was writing a fic, and I had a character who was an actor. And it was, like, he was a character who had done, like, films and stuff like that. and wanted to break in, or like wanted to, like decided he needed time away from that and wanted to do the theater. And I just needed something, like, I just needed a play, like, of something that for him to be doing. And all of a sudden it clicked. Oh, right! Barefoot in the Park was actually a play. Mm-hmm. And so I did it, and then not realizing, like, holy crap, like, this actually fits very well, like, the themes of this with the story I'm writing, it's brilliant. And so, like, I bought the, like, I bought, it's just, like, the script, like, mm-hmm. Of the play. And, like, there were weeks, like, I would just pick it up and, like, flip through it and read it and just still, like, double over laughing because it's so good. I love it. It's just, I don't know, like, I love everything about this movie. Like, and just the play in general. Like, it's so smart as well as being so funny.
One of my favorite things, and I've talked about this before and I will probably talk about it at many other times ad nauseum. One of my favorite things between characters in a movie is banter.
Yes.
And of course, also, you know, not physical, that's the wrong word. It's the right word, but it's the right action.
Physicality?
The wrong word. Physicality of a scene and how... Yes. And the physical intimacy that people play with.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a sexual way, but just in a, hey, we live together domestically.
Yes.
I love when that stuff coincides really well, mm-hmm. but banter is always, like, my number one.
Right.
I mean, one of my favorite movies in the world is The Philadelphia Story.
So, all of the banter.
Hepburn and Grant, I mean... Yeah. The banter doesn't get much better.
Really, it's true.
Yeah, and I don't even know that I can say I grew up on that type of thing. I grew up on rom-coms of the 90s mm-hmm. with my mom and my dad, but my grandma was more into, like, musicals and stuff,
mm-hmm.
although one of my favorite musical couples is Curly and Lori, and they right. have one of the, like, most bantery...
Yeah.
Like, well, the song, this is off topic, but
like, and this explains so much as to why your favorite Shakespeare play is Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, absolutely.
Beatrice and Benedict, yeah.
But yeah, there's a song in Oklahoma called People Will Say We're in Love.
Yeah.
And I love the version that's on the Rodgers and Hammerstein movie with Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones, but I have a version with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And it is so funny to me because basically they literally banter for the whole song. They don't mm-hmm. stop to sing.
Yeah.
They, like... There's one line that says, don't laugh at my jokes too much. And he just looks at her and goes, who laughs at your jokes?
Yeah.
Like, it breaks, like he breaks, right. They both break into the song back and forth to snark at the other one.
Yeah.
And for me, like, there's something about that that I just love, is snarking back and forth, but also just quick banter back and forth.
Yeah.
And so, like, Nick and Nora. It's one of the things I love yes. about Nick and Nora on the Thin Man
movies.
Thin Man,
yeah.
So, yeah, for me, this movie, that like, I was going to love this movie the moment the banter right. started.
Yeah, like, I wasn't even, like, thinking about that going into it.
Yeah.
Because there is just something so charming about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there, like, there's something to be said for the... Like, I appreciate when narratives, but, you know, just also just media in general, like, when they can do repetition well.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with this one, of, like... Every time you've got somebody coming up the stairs, because that's the thing, like, if something is not funny or if something is not affecting, the repetition of it is going to prove that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if it's not funny, like, it's going to fall flat every single time. You know, if something is not moving, like, it's not going to, like, it's not going mm-hmm. to be emotional, like, like every time it, you know, comes up. And so, like, with this movie, it's, like, every single time somebody new comes up the stairs, like, it's freaking hysterical to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every time
they do great with
different.
The rule of three there at the beginning,
yes.
too, and stuff like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, like, because Corey is, like, the only person who can climb these stairs, like, unaffected.
Well, she just, like, runs up them,
oh,
like,
yeah.
she's, like a gazelle.
Like,
she's
oh, yeah.
Never even occurs to her to be tired on
oh,
the way
yeah.
up the stairs.
And, like, every other person is just, like, wheezing when they come in the door.
Yeah. So, yeah, but, I mean, you said the synopsis. So, yeah, the movie opens with, like, them getting married, and there's a song you forgot existed called
Oh, my
Barefoot
gosh, I completely... Because I realized the last couple of times that I've seen this movie, I always came in either when they're checking into the plaza, or the scene where he's trying to get on the elevator to leave.
So yeah, they are just married and they are, you know, riding in a horse-drawn carriage to the plaza.
Yes.
Part of me expected them to say they'd known each other 24 hours just based
it
on...
It almost kind of feels that way.
Yeah. But you realize later, based on Mom's reaction to him and stuff, that
yeah.
her mom's reaction to him. They've clearly known each other.
Yeah, they've been together for a while, you can tell. Like, I wouldn't say necessarily, like, a long
time. Not a long time, but long enough
maybe,
for mom to
maybe
know
in that, like, they've known each other, but, like, maybe haven't necessarily been together for
to
a long
time. To me, it felt like they'd ran off and got married at first.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because the way, like, she is so handsy with him. It's so cute.
Like, she's all over him, but, like...
Granted, it's their honeymoon, so...
True. It's like, this is also Robert Redford in his prime. I do not blame her. for me, it's at the very beginning. Like, credits are still popping up on the screen when Corey stands up in the carriage and, like, flings her bouquet at a, like, on a, mounted, like, throws her bouquet to a mounted policeman. Yeah. And just like throws at her arms like, we got married, and like Paul is just like trying to drag her back down. It's like, sit down, Court, like, sit down. And I was like, to me, like, that encapsulates everything that we need to know about their marriage.
Yeah, and so then, like, they go into the hotel to sign in at the plaza, and like he can't even get in the door because she keeps kissing him.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because it's so like she's I compared it to Dharma and Greg, and I don't know why that was the first thing that popped in my head, because that's a it's a fairly common trope now.
Yes.
For the zany, wacky wife and the straight-laced husband.
Yes.
Like, that's a pretty, you know, common trope. Even back then, Lucy and Ricky.
Right.
Bewitched.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty it's a pretty common trope. I Dream of Jeannie. But yeah. The way that they deliver it, you can see, like, the way he reacts to it, you can see how much he adores her.
For me, like, the
difference... But he's a little embarrassed. Yeah.
For, like, the difference between some of those, like, you mentioning specifically, like, Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, and to a certain extent, Lucy, because Lucy is so exaggerated,
mm-hmm.
and Lucy gets into things that will literally only ever happen in a sitcom.
Yes.
And so, for me, like, that, with the trope of the wacky wife and the straight-laced husband... It definitely feels more like something that's more isolated to sitcoms.
Yeah.
Than actually, like, than film. And so for me, like, see this, like, watching this in a movie versus, like, this being a sitcom with Corey and Paul, these two feel real to me.
I will tell you, there are fic ideas percolating for, like, AU for this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love the idea of doing it.
So many.
I just can't decide who. I have, like, four.
Oh, I know.
That are, like I'm like, ooh, but no, I need to focus on what I'm talking about.
Rewatching this movie, it kind of drove home for me, just like I said, how real Corey and Paul feel to me.
I mean,
they are people I've known.
But, so, yeah, they get into the plaza, and, like, I love the moment when they get into their room, and you just start seeing the newspapers pile up outside the door. 5 days. Isn't that a record? Nah. Newlyweds. That's 9. Yeah, that's the first rule of three instance, really.
Yes.
Because, like, he puts the first paper down the first morning, and nobody comes out for it. And we see, like, a few mornings later, and that's when he does the whole 5 days thing. And then we see the next morning.
Yeah.
And he puts another one down, and then you get him, you get the husband.
Paul leaving.
Paul walking out the door. And she follows him out in just his
top. It is one of my favorite scenes in this movie.
So funny.
But yeah, because Paul is leaving. Like, he's a young lawyer. He has stuff to do. He has a job he has to get back to.
As my husband would say, priorities.
Yes. And so, Paul is trying to leave, and Corey follows him out of the hotel room, and she's only wearing his pajama top.
Yep, that's it.
Which is very short.
Yes.
Very short.
And, well, because Jane Fonda has long legs, so I mean...
True.
It was going to be short no matter what, but on her, it's decent.
Yes, barely. And she, like, she just keeps trying to, like, reel Paul back in, like, for kisses and embraces. And he's just like, I have, and, like, she is just kind of pulling the, I have the line.
She tells him to call in sick, and he's like, I am sick, but I have to go to work.
Yeah. And he's like, and he's telling her, like, I'll be home by 5:30. And I can't remember what it is exactly she says, but she's like, but, you know, what if you don't love me then, or, you know, by then, or something like that. It's like, if a marriage can't last until 5:30, she's like, if it's a good marriage, it'll last until 5:30.
Yeah.
And, I'd also had the line, I'd forgotten, when they're, because she's kind of joking around and, like, embarrassing him on the elevator ride up to their suite, like, right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, like, holding each other, like, they're walking down the hallway to their room, and I have, like, he's kind of joking with her, and he's like, is this what life's going to be like for the next 50 years? She's like, 50 years? That's not very long. Like, it, again, it's one of those telling things of just...
Yeah.
Like, I love about them, but the, But back to the scene of them, like, when he's trying to leave, she, like, she's pretty much, like, demanding kisses.
Well, he doesn't want to come back to kiss her. He's at the elevator.
Yeah.
And she starts, she's like, fine, I'm just going to give you back your top.
Basically. Yeah. It's like, if you don't come back and kiss me, like, I'm going to give you back your, I'm going to give you back your pajamas. And
right, he kinda, here in the hallway.
Yeah. And I love, like, he kind of doesn't believe her, and then, like, she, like, the first button comes undone, and he literally, like, drops his briefcase and, like, sprints down the hallway to, like, wrap her up so she can't, and then proceeds to, like, lay another kiss on her.
And then she's like, make it 4:30. And she finally gets back in the room. She follows him, and he gets on the elevator. That's what it is.
Yeah.
He gets on the elevator, and she gets in front of it and says, thanks, Mr. Well, I forgot his
name. Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
But she's like, let me, call me next time you're in town.
Oh, yeah.
And he just gives her this, like, deadpan, like,
just to mess with her, because he steps onto an elevator full of people.
Yeah, well, because when they got off the elevator to go to their room, the first time, she said something like, I'm only 15, Mr. And
yeah.
He just kind of like, really, woman?
Oh, yeah, because so that's the thing about Corey, is, like, you have to realize, like, early on, is that almost everything is a game.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
she is having fun. She's young. Yes. And all she wants to do is be adventurous and have a good time.
Yes. It's like everything she's doing, she's trying to have fun.
But so then we go, like, we see her going to their apartment. She apparently, he has not actually been. You find out later he viewed one on the bottom floor.
The third floor.
But he didn't know that. Like, she's telling the address. Like, that's how much he hasn't thought about this.
Yeah.
So we see her, like, bounding up the stairs, 5 flights of stairs to their apartment.
Yeah.
And with her doing it, it doesn't seem like a big deal. Because she's just like, I hesitate to draw this comparison. But the Big Bang Theory, they're on the 4th floor, and all they ever do is take the stairs.
Yeah.
And, like, the unreality of the fact that they're never tired by the time they reach the top floor. I'm like, after watching this, I'm like, you know, Barefoot in the Parks makes way more sense.
Right. It's like, to be fair, like, we lived on, well, I was thinking about in Foster.
Yeah, we lived on the 3rd floor.
Yeah, we lived on the 3rd floor. And even, like, after a while, like, you do get used to it.
Yeah.
It's like, you're maybe just, like, a little out of breath by the time you get up.
Depends on how fast you came up.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of stuff, yeah. Like, yeah, it's, if you take your time, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
If you're carrying a basket full of laundry, you're definitely winded by the time you get there.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the next dorm I lived in, we lived in the same dorm, but you were on the 2nd floor.
Yeah, I was on the ground floor, and yeah, you were on the 4th.
I was on the 4th, which was technically the third.
It was weird. It's like,
because our basement is...
The basement was the 1st floor.
Yeah.
And then there was the 2nd floor, which was the ground floor.
This place had an elevator, but my dorm room was next to a set of stairs. Why would I take an elevator when there are stairs right there? So, and that, for me, that one I don't think I ever got used to, going up those stairs with laundry.
Yeah.
Ever. Because there was a bit steeper, and I went up an extra flight.
Yep.
But yeah, I was feeling the pain of the telephone guy.
Oh my gosh. And the phone guy, like, fans of the Golden Girls would recognize as Stanley. Bornak. Yeah. Yeah, Dorothy's ex-husband. He's the phone maintenance guy. Harry Pepper.
One of the most scene-stealing characters.
Oh my gosh,
movie.
He's so good.
Like, I think he steals every scene he's in.
He does, because he's... Because there's him first, like, you know, he comes up to install the phone in their apartment,
mm-hmm.
and she is just, like, she's so bubbly and just, like, full of energy and trying to, you know, she's just excited about, you know, but she's worried because,
she's,
like,
also not seeing it with clear eyes like he is.
Yes.
Because this is just a job. So, you know, he sees the fact that it's freezing in there because the radiator's not on, because she tries to turn it on, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then he sees the hole in the glass in the ceiling.
They have a skylight, and there's a hole in one of the in the glass.
Yeah, and
it's
like,
so mwah.
And he sees all of these things, and he's just kind of like,
and
okay,
yeah. Pretty much like this is kind of Corey's attitude towards the apartment is like she has furniture on the way. Like, furniture is going to be delivered,
mm-hmm.
and like she goes into the bedroom. And she's kind of, like, taking some steps and trying to measure it out. And she's, like, she's counting out this room. This room is 5.5 feet wide. The bed is 6 feet.
Yeah.
And so she's just kind of, she's like, oh, 5, 6 feet long, 5.5. We'll make it work. You know, just kind of like, you know, minor detail. And you kind of get, like, that's, like, everything in life is a minor detail for Corey. But, so, yeah, so we have the phone, and then, like, finally, like, the phone gets hooked up.
Well, you have the old man delivery, too, in there. Gosh. The old man, I don't think, ever actually speaks
a word. No, he never does!
He says one thing. He looks up and realizes she's on the fifth floor and says something to the effect of, oh, no, or
something,
oh, boy.
Like, or, like, it's always the top floor, or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, so he's just like, oh, no. And then he's old. So he gets to the top floor, he can't breathe. So you have, I'm going to call him Stanley, I know that's not his name, but Stan on the floor.
Harry Pepper
is the character. Yeah, that's right, Harry Pepper. And he ends up going, I think he wants you to sigh.
I'm like, literally, when the old man gets there, all he is doing is wheezing.
Yeah.
Like, the extent of his dialogue is...
So funny.
Like...
And then, yeah, they get the phone hooked up, so she starts to make a phone call, and you know, Harry is still standing there, and so she finally calls the office.
Yeah, she calls Paul's office.
Paul's office, and Paul's not there. He left about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
We see him arriving in the cab downstairs. Mm-hmm. And so the telephone guy, and he end up passing on, like, the third floor.
Yeah. Well, like, and Corey is so, like, she's so nervous. Like,
because she wanted it to look perfect before
because, like, she wanted furniture in there. Like, you know, she thought, like, before Paul came home, like, she was going to have all of this, like, all of this put together. And, like, actually, he would be coming into a home.
Yeah.
But now, like, there's paper, like, everywhere and, you know, stuff still kind of covering the stove. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and she's, and so, like, she's grabbing all this paper and then kind of realizing, like, well, we don't actually have any place to put it. So she ends up shoving it in the fridge, which made me laugh so hard.
Who amongst us, between us, has not, on a busy day,
we were
cleaning for our room checks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Oh, I, as soon as you said...
something it didn't go in.
As soon as you said that for a split second, I was like, huh, what did Anne and I shove in our refrigerator? I'm sure we did.
I don't think I shoved anything in the refrigerator, but if you had opened some of my desk drawers or some of my, like some things like that, it would have been a bad sight. You know what we actually used to do? We used to put stuff in our laundry basket and cover the top and then put it under the bed.
That was smart.
Off topic. But the point being, who amongst us has not hidden stuff very quickly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When we have to.
The other thing is, we see it from his perspective, climbing the stairs.
Oh, my God.
And what we did not see until now is how creepy this building is.
And, like, weirdos who live there.
Well, like,
you know?
the tuna fish cans outside.
Oh, yeah.
What the crap is that about?
Who knows?
Like, people keep peeking out of their windows and out of their doors at him as he goes
up.
Nobody says hi or welcome to the building.
Yeah, everybody just kind of, like, stares at him for a second
as he walks up. In, there's some beatniks coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And not that I have a problem with that, but he clearly is not comfortable with that.
Well, it's like, I think they're very, like, shining twins. Like, they are dressed exactly alike.
Yeah.
Like, when they walk out, and, like, they just kind of flank him, and he just kind of turns and looks.
Yeah. Because
they are literally dressed exactly alike.
Yeah. And so you see it from his perspective as, this place is a lot creepier than I anticipated.
Yeah, like, because he doesn't have, like, the memories of this place yet. And
because she's the one who came back and, like, picked the color for the walls and all that kind of stuff.
And I just love that by the time he finally gets there, he's straight up dying.
Oh, yeah. Because he's carrying a suitcase and a briefcase. And he has to sit down on the suitcase.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, drops the suitcase as he comes in the room.
Oh, yeah. And just kind of, like, his first reaction is just kind of, huh. Because... he cannot breathe, and literally the second his foot is across the threshold, Corey has plastered herself to him and is, like, kissing him, and he's just like, I don't have air. I don't have air for this.
I skipped the other thing I wanted to say. Dang it. When Harry left, he told her, he turns to her, and he says, may you install mini extensions. I laughed so hard. Because, like, that is the perfect, like, blessing for telephone man. Because back in the day, kids,
yes, there were landlines.
This was a landline, which means it had to be hooked into a wall.
Yes.
And, like, it wasn't like the, like, phone numbers now. You had to, like, connect to an operator.
Yes.
And, like, you didn't dial, like, you know, 555, whatever. You dialed, like, Gramercy.
Yes.
709 or whatever. It was the building and then the...
Yes.
So extensions is when you had children, you would put phones in their room as they got older.
Yes.
See, that's called extensions, just so you know. It didn't occur to me until I started talking about it. I went, wait, there could be someone listening realizing that has never had a landline.
Yeah.
Because thinking about it, as an adult woman, I have never had a landline.
Yeah.
Except for at college, we did. But they don't give those anymore either, apparently, where we went.
That doesn't
They don't
surprise
have dorm
me.
Phones anymore, yeah.
Yeah, I remember...
Because my sister went there.
Yeah, I remember hearing they were phasing that out.
So yeah, like, I've never had it. We do cell phones. We don't do landlines.
Like, I have not had... I've not had a landline since 2000, probably 2002, 2003.
Yeah, my parents don't have a landline, but that's because the business that they
right.
they work in used to use their line, their phone line.
Yeah.
But no, my sister-in-law actually, they got a third cell phone line, and they leave that cell phone with their 10-year-old. Because sometimes they're not... They have a weird, like, crossover time, her husband and she.
Yeah.
Where he's going to class and she... Or he's going to class and she's coming home from work.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets off work at the time he has to be at class. So it's only a few minutes. But, like... They have a lot of people that are over and stuff, too. I'm not saying the kids are by themselves.
Right.
And, like, even if they were, my 10-year-old nephew is actually pretty responsible, which is shocking. But, so they have a cell phone specifically so their son has something in case for a few minutes if he's by himself.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense.
But it was
sense.
Just one of those things, rather than getting a landline, they just got another cell phone, because it's cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and the fact that, like, you can pay, like, $30 for a pay-as-you-go phone and not have to worry about it. Yeah,
exactly. So, but that's, like, so when they talk about extensions, and we talk about the phone getting ripped out of the wall or getting hooked up, those are things that used to happen.
Yes, because cell phones were not a thing.
Anyway, so so then we get to the part where he's trying to work, because he got a phone call.
Yeah, because when she called the office, she set the phone down,
mm-hmm.
because Paul was on his way up. Not thinking it's going to take, like, an hour for him to climb 5 flights of stairs. Which, the other thing that cracks me up is that every time somebody talks about how many flights of stairs it is, and she's like, well, it's only 5. They're like, no, there's more stairs than that. And she's like, well, if you don't count the stoop. I counted the stoop.
Yeah, so there's 6 flights.
Yeah, there's 6 flights of stairs.
To be fair, the stoop is actually not quite a flight of stairs, but close.
Yeah, it's at least, like, 3/4 of a flight of stairs.
Yeah, because it's, like, 4 or 5 steps, like, up.
More than that.
I was trying to think how steep they were. But yeah, it's like, it's up.
It's at least 10 stairs.
Yeah, it's up.
Yeah, it's like, just that repetition thing of, like, I counted the stoop. But so we find out, you know, she's left the phone off the hook, and
they've been having, like, schmoopy talk.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, once Paul kind of catches his breath, and then she's continuing to shower him with kisses. I do love the exchange. It's like, you're a pretty good kisser for a lawyer. I'm a pretty good lawyer for a kisser, or something like that. But, like, and to which his coworker overhears that
and mocks him for
and
it.
And mocks him for it.
The phone.
But they find out, you know, like, you know, he and his coworker, they've been put in charge of, like, a big case. It's like they have a big case that they have to work on tomorrow. And none of the furniture has arrived. Like, so Paul is kind of, like, frantically looking for a place to work.
Like, where can I sit? And as that happens, she walks out as he's getting off the phone, holding a piece of lingerie. And she actually takes her shirt off and is just holding lingerie in front of her.
She is in a bra and corduroys and holding up this piece of black negligee.
And he...
Is fully working. Distracted.
Is working. No, he's not distracted by her. He's distracted
by work. I mean, he's distracted from her.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
He's prioritizing,
my
husband calls it.
It was so funny.
The first thing I said, when he doesn't even pay any attention to her, is, girl, I've been there. Because, like, my husband and I love each other. We've been married almost 10 years, to be fair. So it's a little
like
bit different.
Like, 2 weeks, it'll be 10
years. It's a little bit
years.
Different.
Yeah.
Like, to be fair, in 8 days, I think I could still distract him from work at that time. But, you know, my husband, he's kind of like Paul in that, like, single-mindedness of once he's like, I have stuff I need to get done, you need to stop bothering me right
now. I would say
right
Josh has more single-minded focus than Paul.
Yes. True.
Yes.
But similar is what I was
yes,
going
absolutely.
For. But yeah, so she can't distract him, which is hilarious. Finally, she does.
Right. But one of my favorite lines in this movie I love is, like, she kind of gets a little pouty over the fact that, like, he's not paying attention to her. And he just keeps going on and on about this case that he has. And, like, she tells him, this is great. You know, I'm trying to get you all hot and bothered, and you're summing up for the jury.
Yep. Well, see, and then after that, he's like, I'm going to be really... Like, when he finally gets distracted, he kisses her, and he's like, I'm going to be a really bad lawyer. And she's like, good, we'll starve, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'd rather have you than have any... Like, I love that.
Which, like, it's shortly after this. Again, like, he's still, you know, kind of trying to find a place to...
They're full on getting ready to have sex when the bell rings again.
Yeah. Well, also, like, at some point during this is when like, he's realizing just... how cold it is in the apartment.
Yeah. And she's offering to keep him warm at night.
Offering to keep him warm. And, but like I said, he's realizing just exactly how cold it is in the apartment. And it's talking about, like, you know, they're, like, it's not just a draft. He starts checking the windows.
It's windy.
Yeah. Like, he's like, there's not a draft, Corey. Like, there's a northeasterly wind coming through here. And she's trying to distract him from the fact that they have a hole in their ceiling.
Well, and then he finds out there's no tub in his bathroom.
Yeah, there's only a shower.
And then he realizes how tiny the bedroom is.
Yeah.
So he has a lot of reasons to be distracted when she's trying to...
But I do love when, like, they're standing there discussing, and he's talking about, you know, the hole in their ceiling, and, like, the fact that, you know, like, do you have any idea how cold it is going to get? And she's just kind of indignant, and she had called essentially, like, the, time and temperature number.
Oh, yeah.
And was given the forecast. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's not going to be freezing, it's going to be cloudy with a chance of
kind of chase around the apartment. What was that?
That's, yeah.
Snow.
Yeah.
Great. I'm gonna have to shovel my apartment. So, as they're finally distracted him, and they're getting like.
Well, hold up. Before we get into that,
okay.
Like this again. It's one of those lines that completely highlights their entire relationship. Is he is just all up in arms over the fact that it is going to be snowing in his living room again. I understand where the man is coming from.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing one should be upset about. And just finally, she's like, well, what do you want me to do about it? He's like, I want you to go to pieces like me.
Yeah. And she just smiles at him.
Yeah.
I love that part.
But yeah, they, like I said, they do start moving.
He's getting her hot and bothered. Yeah, they're getting hot and bothered.
They're heading towards the bedroom.
And the bell rings. And she goes, please let that be the bed.
Yeah.
And
please be the bed.
Be the bed. It is a glass of cold water. It's a bucket of cold water. It's your mom.
Yeah.
And she freaks out. That's when she freaks out a little bit.
Yes. It's her mom. Then she freaks out even more. Yeah.
Because she's like, I didn't want mom to see this before Tuesday. She was supposed to be here before then. I wanted her to see it when it was all done and I had everything fixed. And
yeah.
She's going to hate it and she's going to judge us. Make sure you don't tell her how much we're paying for the apartment.
Yeah.
Because mom's from New Jersey.
Yes.
So prices would be cheaper there.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, so mom finally makes it upstairs and almost collapses.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I love, like, the moment Paul, like, bolts across the room to catch her.
Oh my god. Yeah, because mom faints. Or not faints, but, like,
almost
she,
collapses.
She swoons a bit.
Yeah. And mom, I will say, does her very best to find all the positives in the situation.
Yes.
She is very confused as to why anyone would want to live this place.
Oh yeah.
But she, yeah, oh, so funny. And so, while that's happening, she ends up, Corey sends Paul down for some scotch. And then, by the time Paul gets back with the scotch, Mom's got to go because Aunt Harriet is downstairs waiting.
Yeah, Aunt Harriet's waiting, and she's haunting.
So, I will say, there was, right before the mom went up, decided to go visit, she's like, I kind of want to pop up and see them. Do you think they'd mind? And her Aunt Harriet is like, oh, she's been home. Like, of course, every girl wants her mother to come visit. I'm just going, No.
It's what young bride doesn't want her mother's advice?
What young bride doesn't want her mother's advice? And I'm like, oh.
Not after 6 days.
Not popping in unannounced. just no. Like, that's a big no. But anyway, so yeah, so then mom's going to leave. And that's when Paul has found out in the liquor store that they live in a house of freaks.
He's like, oh yeah, like I just found out from the liquor store. Like, Like, we have the, what is it, the greatest weirdos in the world living in our building.
Yeah.
And he starts going through the, like, he mentions the, there's one apartment where there's apparently a same-sex couple living.
But nobody can tell what sex they are. And there's another couple that has, like, three people in there, and he goes, I guess this one's the umpire.
Right. And,
as he's going down to leave, he sees, a woman answering the door, and she's like, oh, drunk, with a, like, there's a police officer and a man at the door, and she's like, drunk again, I'll take care of him, and she pulls the police officer aside, and the other guy turns around and leaves, so you get the idea that her husband, I guess, or somebody comes home drunk as a cop every night.
Oh my gosh.
But yes, yeah, so he's not thrilled, and, oh, then no. Mr., and then Mr. Velasco.
They talking about, yeah, Mr. Velasco, who lives in the attic. Which, like, realizing, like, wait, there's, like, actually, there's a floor above us.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, he lives in the attic, and I can't really, like, they talk
he's
about,
been, like, all over the place. He's climbed the Alps. He's done, you know, he's climbed mountains. He's gone to foreign countries. He's this like, crazy outlandish man.
Yeah, he's this, like, eccentric adventurer, basically.
Yeah, and he lives above us.
Yeah.
Which you realize later that he lives, you have to climb a ladder to get into his room.
Right.
And so she's Corey just seems more excited.
Oh, absolutely!
To know all of these things, and he's more like, "But no. This is weird. This isn't us."
Yeah,
I love that whole thing. Exchange.
Yeah, we have finally, like, they get the news their furniture is not going to be arriving. Nope. But however, the store is going to send over a mattress and blankets. So we have them, like, in bed that night, like, wearing, like, he's wearing, like, a toboggan and, like, full coat and gloves, like, she's in a parka, like they're under the blankets, and Corey hears the door knock, like, she hears somebody at the door, and Paul just can't be bothered to get out of bed, because he has a big case in the morning.
No, but what is it he says?
I don't remember.
You pick the apartment, you get the door.
Yes!
So to that effect. Because he wanted to go stay in a hotel, and she wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
So he's like, you wanted to stay here, you have to answer the door. Yeah. And just closes his eyes and tries to make sleep.
Oh my gosh.
But before that happened, she's sitting there staring at him. Are you asleep? Just my hands and feet. like his eyes are closed. And I'm notorious for doing that to Josh. Like, that's one of those, like, sitcom tropes that's real.
Right.
Like, I have so done, because something just occurs to me. I'm like, hey, are you awake? No, I'm not. What do you want? Like, that is a conversation that has occurred in my bedroom. I'm not as bad as, like, some sitcoms where you pick up the pillow and beat him in the face with it and then go, are you awake? Because I've thought about it a time or two. But,
oh, like, I can imagine after 10 years.
Yeah. But yeah, so that part cracked me up. I was like, are you awake? Just my hands and feet. Are you asleep? Just my hands and feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she gets up to answer the door, and before she can actually get to the door, it starts to unlock.
Yeah.
And Mr. Velasco just lets himself in. Because he needs to crawl out their bedroom window, because she goes, well, do you not have the key to your apartment? Oh, no, I have the key. It just no longer fits the lock.
Because that's what happens when you're 4 months behind on rent.
Yeah. And then we have this really weird conversation where he's hitting on her.
Yeah.
Super creepy. Like, and he ends up telling her he's 50-something years old.
He's like, I'm 58 years old and a very nice fellow.
And he's like, I wish I were 10 years older, because dirty old men get away with everything.
Yeah.
Or get away with more. And I was just
oh my gosh.
Oh, well, what? He's at an awkward age.
Yeah, there's a line that he has that I thought was so great. I'm trying to find it. Oh yeah, he's not quite leering at her, but
no.
it's close.
Yeah.
He's like, does your husband work during the day? Yes. In an office? Yes. Good. I work at home during the day. I predict some interesting complications. Am I making you nervous? Very nervous. Wonderful. Once a month, I try to make pretty young girls nervous just to keep my hand in.
Yeah.
He's clearly such, like, a weirdo.
But he doesn't actually mean it in a threatening manner.
Right.
It's like, I'm just messing with you. Like, I came off really creepy and threatening there, but I didn't mean it.
Right.
And then he explains to her how their heat works, so he kind of saves them.
Yeah. And he's like, the plumbing in this place is all backwards. It's like, it says, left to turn on, which means you actually turn it right. And don't forget, flush up.
See, weirdly, randomly, that I would have tried that anyway. When I was a kid, our shower at our house was opposite.
Mm.
Like, you had to go cold to get hot and hot to get cold.
Yep.
So it doesn't even, like, I grew up that way, so I always try both ways.
Oh, yeah.
It amused me. I was like, that's great.
Yeah, but somehow, like, during all of this, like, Corey starts getting ideas to set up her mother with Mr. Velasco.
Because she's already told her mom that she needs to have love. And by love, Corey means sex. Because she's like, I've had 6 days of love, and I've never experienced... And mom's like, nope, don't want it. Don't want to talk about that. Not with you.
She's like, do you not... Like, I can't believe you don't have the conversation. She goes, oh, I don't mind having the conversation, just not with you in the room.
I don't have the conversation with you in the room.
Yeah.
I love that part. And so, Corey has decided that mom and Mr. Velasco would be perfect for each other, because they're both of a certain age and alone.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then, she... immediately at 2 o'clock in the morning calls her mother to make sure her mother is still coming for dinner on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I do love, like, finally, like, Paul is when Velasco, like, he, which they have a step stool, but Mr. Velasco hoists Corey up because the radiator is at the ceiling.
Yeah,
he hoists her up so that she can
turn the heater on.
Yeah, so she can turn the heater on. She is in a parka and gym socks. That is all she is wearing.
That's all we can see.
That's all we can see.
One would assume she has something on under the parka.
Possibly. Maybe.
It's Corey, so I'm not sure.
It's Corey. And that's when Paul walks in to see, like, his wife being hoisted into the air by some very strange man. Velasco has a few, like, he has a few quips and then disappears into the bedroom. Paul goes after him, and he's gone. He's climbed out the window.
And you see him, he actually climbs, like, up and goes around the top of their apartment, like, where the skylight is.
He kind of, like, goes over the ledge, kind of crawl, like, climbs up sort of, like the build, like, facing of the building.
Yeah.
And, yeah, then walks along their
skylight. And to get into him, the window of his apartment.
Yes.
But, oh, man. He has also invited them to a cocktail party at his house.
Yes.
Or his apartment the next night. So, the next day, when Paul comes home, Corey's waiting for him at the bus stop. And she's like, immediately grabs him and starts kissing on him. And she's like, I'm going to meet you here every day, because waiting for you to get upstairs just takes too long. And he goes, you will not meet me here every day. The bus driver will think you're my mother. Why that made me laugh so hard, but it did.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, the fact that she can't wait for him to get up the stairs. Like, that's cute to a point.
Right.
Like, I was that young bride once long ago.
Well,
the thing
about Corey, and it's something very childlike about her, is that all of her emotions are big. Mm-hmm. Her emotions are so big. Like, everything.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, like, she, when she says, like, she can't wait, like, she just really cannot wait.
Yeah.
But I love this whole conversation, like, that they're having walking back to their apartment building. It's like, she, you know, she's wrapped around his arm and everything, and kind of hugging him while they're walking. And she has, like, did you miss me today? And he goes, no. Just, like, deadpan, no. And she's like, what, you didn't? And he goes, you called me 8 times today.
Yeah, you called me 8 times. I didn't have time to miss you.
Yeah.
But this is, we realize as they're talking that this is actually the day after, or this is after the cocktail party at Mr. Velasquez's.
Yeah,
Vasco's. Sorry, I kept doing that in my notes, too.
I, like, weirdly, as soon as I spoke his name aloud a minute ago, I was like, wait, is it Velasco? Is it Velasquez?
Yeah.
Damn it.
But anyway, so Mr. Velasquez, and he's like, and Paul is a little bit, like, because this is the Tuesday night where they're all going to meet and have dinner. He's a little bit incredulous at the chances that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he's like, the man wears Japanese kimonos, and, yeah, I just don't really see this working, Corey. Like, it's not going to do what you think it's going to do. And she's like, Mom's going to come. She's going to, you know, she's wearing something nice. I already told her. And
and he just cannot believe it.
And, like, Corey, and to distract him, Corey feels Paul in on what's going on with his family, because they called.
Yes.
That is such a domestic, like, little scene. Yeah, I love
absolutely.
And so then they finally get up to their apartment, and they're getting ready for the night. Mm-hmm. Mom arrives, and Mom is already not feeling well. Like, Mom only came to see the apartment.
Yes.
She gets to the top of the stairs and has to take a pink pill, which we find out much later she has ulcers.
Yeah.
And so it must be some kind of...
I'm guessing it's sort of like a proto, like, Pepto-Bismol
kind of thing. Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Yeah. because it never says and it explains what it is, but she just has to take a pink pill.
Yeah.
And they bring her, this is the first of many times, or three times, I think, that this gag happens.
Yes.
She goes, once again, rule of three, comedy. They bring her Corey brings her a drink to take her pill with, and she takes a drink, she goes, a martini to take a pill? She goes, well, I thought you'd want to, you know, relax. Yeah. I had a martini before I left the house, that's why I need the pill. So then they end up having to go up to Mr. Blasco's for hors d'oeuvres.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
And he...
Hold on. Before we get into that, we have... Paul is just kind of mentioning something about Mr. Velasco. And, you know, and her mother is saying, like, oh, trust me, I know. Corey and I talked the day, like, and all she did was tell me about Mr. Velasco. And he goes, oh, well, did you know that he's been married four times? She goes, yes, she told me. If I were you, I'd sleep with a gun. Because the mother has, like, just that same kind of dry, deadpan sense of humor that Paul has.
Yeah, I was going to say, later on, like, throughout this whole evening that they spend together, the relationship between Paul and Corey's mother is, like, their friendship is
just amazing. Oh, it's so good!
Like, it is so fun.
Well, because that is something, like, especially, like, it kind of became the trend of just, like, the mother-in-law is always to be despised.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the mother-in-law is this, like, evil old crone, like, who has nothing of value. Like, is just there. Or it's
just there to nitpick and find stuff wrong with
like
you.
Yes, like, she's there to be a nag. And, like, and that's it. And that's something I love about this movie, is that Paul, like, you can, like, he genuinely likes his mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, and, like, they get along like a house on fire.
Oh, yeah. They have, like you said, they have similar yes. comedy, like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, similar wit. And then, but as she's sitting there, she's like, so, Paul, when are your parents getting here? I'm looking forward to seeing them. My parents aren't coming.
Yeah.
Why would you think that? And he just looks at Corey. And Corey's like, well,
like, okay,
you
mother.
You wouldn't have come if I told you it was a blind date, Mr. Velasco. It's what?
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, I was trying to look clean.
Because like, she was like, Paul's parents. I was just trying to be clean. Like, I should have bought a new dress. I should have done this.
Well, because, like, you find out, like, she's had a rough time getting there. She had to park three blocks away. It started raining.
Hold on. I've got the quote. It is one of the moments where, like, every time I double over laughing because, like, I am nearly sick laughing. I love it. She's explaining to Paul, like, I had to park the car three blocks away. Then it started to rain, so I ran the last two blocks. Then my heel got caught in a subway grating. When I pulled my foot out, I stepped in a puddle. Then a cab went by and splashed my stockings. If the hardware store downstairs was open, I was going to buy a knife and kill myself.
Yeah, and she says that all completely, like, like, trying to catch her breath.
Yeah!
Because she's also, like, passed out next to their stoop.
And again, just very, like, matter of fact. Like, she doesn't exaggerate it. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't say it in a way that's hyperbolic. It's just, like, it's so good.
But so now she knows that she's on a date with Mr. Velasco. And she's like, how's my hair? Like, she's trying to get her daughter to fix her hair. And, like... They finally make it up to Velasco's apartment.
Yeah, like they have to climb a ladder to get up there.
He is a gourmet person. He's in a club with Prince Philip and I didn't remember who else.
Fidel Castro and
the
Prince of Prince. Yeah, King or Prince of Sweden, like some Swedish royalty. Yeah,
so they're
they get together like every 5 years and eat a meal that they cooked all themselves or something like that.
Next time it's my turn.
Yeah,
like it's just really funny.
Oh my gosh!
He's prepared this thing. They have to wait exactly. It's eel with, like, served something else. So they have to wait exactly 30 seconds to eat it. And you're supposed to pop it in your mouth. Don't just bite into it. And, I mean, I will give it to Corey's mom. Like, she's game. She doesn't feel well.
Like, Velasco says it later. And, like, it's perfectly, like, perfect way of describing her. Like, he says to her later. And he's like, you know what you are? Like, you're a good sport.
Which at the time, which she doesn't take badly,
right? But it's very true. It's like she,
well, because her mom or her daughter told her. Corey said, "Just mom, just you know, be one of the fellows tonight.
Yeah,
don't
be one of the fellows.
Don't you know? Don't be picky about stuff. Yeah. Just do what everyone else is doing. Essentially.
Oh yeah.
So
but, yeah, this place like it's very one like Velasco's apartment. Like it's all like Asian inspired.
Yeah,
very.
They're all sitting on. They're not sitting in chairs. They're sitting on.
On poofs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor mom, like can't even get out of hers.
Oh yeah. Like I want to say like I think Velasco is like wearing his kimono, and steps behind like a Chinese screen. You know, like, it's all like very Asian inspired, and so like it's meant to be like very exotic. It's very like now would be kind of like boho chic.
Yes,
but for the time, it like it's all Oriental, very exotic.
Yeah.
But
so mom, the second time this guy's used, mom pops that thing in her mouth, but pops too hard and kind of chokes on it. So immediately, Paul, being the good son-in-law he is, pours her a drink of the clear liquid on the middle of the table, which must be water. And gives it to her. She drinks it and chokes and goes, "This isn't water, is it?"
And no, vodka.
Oh, no, that's vodka. And she's like, "Wait, what?"
She's like, "Oh, I think I need another pink pill."
Yeah. And then obviously Corey, who is very adventurous in game, tries the eel stuff
and loves it.
And so then she tells Paul to try it. Paul does not want to try it.
No.
Paul is the least game person here.
Absolutely.
He goes where Corey tells him to do because he's a good husband, and that's about it. Because the whole thing is he gets flat out told, don't just bite into the thing. You have to, like, pop it all in your mouth at once. Otherwise, it's bitter.
Yeah.
Well, he just nibbles on it. Yes. So it's nasty. And, you know, Corey's like, try again. Just this time pop it in your mouth. He goes, no, I'm good.
Like, no, this stuff's only good, like, for 5 minutes. And I think we've hit the 5-minute mark.
Yep. Mm-mm. So then they're like, so, ready to go out? And mom's like, wait.
I thought we were eating
your apartment.
Yeah, I thought we were eating your flat.
Well, we had a small fire. What happened? We turned the stove on. Because this apartment is crap.
Like, if anybody listening, like, if you've seen How I Met Your Mother and the apartment that Lily gets after she breaks up with Marshall,
mm-hmm.
like, she has, like, a one-room apartment and she has a device called a stove inkerator. Because it's a stove, a sink, and a refrigerator. That's almost what Corey and Paul have. Like, it's super tiny, and just nothing works. They're going to go to an Albanian restaurant.
Well, at first they suggest, like, they're trying to figure out someplace close by. He goes, oh, I know. Ms. Velasco's like, I have the perfect place. It's in Staten Island.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about Staten Island. Oh, my gosh.
So they have to take a ferry to Staten Island.
They have to take a ferry to Staten Island, like, at night.
It's 0 degrees. It's 30 degrees. And so they leave, and Mr. Velasco's not wearing a jacket.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's that. Like, oh, it's only 30 degrees.
And meanwhile, at this point, you get that Corey is tired of waiting on
Paul.
On Paul, because Paul is last one out the door. He's putting on gloves. She's like, what for? It's only 30 degrees. And he just kind of looks at her like, you're crazy. It's 30 degrees outside.
And, oh my gosh, they... When they're on the ferry, like, when they're on the ferry going to Staten Island, like, Corey and Mr. Velasco are, like, they're looking at, like, one of those, like, telescope viewers.
Yeah.
And like, they're joking around.
They're having a good time.
Yeah, they're having a good time. And Paul and his mother-in-law are just to be like, I hate this, I'm freezing. Me too, I hate this, I'm freezing.
Ethel doesn't ever say she hates it. She just looks over and she goes, I'm glad that they're having a good time.
Yeah.
But she's about to lose her lunch.
Oh, yeah,
she's
absolutely.
Got her head pressed against the what has to be the freezing cold
okay.
thing.
I was going to mention this a second ago. Okay. This was many more years ago than I would like to admit. But I went to New York when I was a teenager to dance in the Macy's parade.
Mm-hmm.
We took the ferry to Liberty Island to go to the Statue of Liberty. And let me tell you, this was late November. This wasn't even, like, this movie takes place in February.
Yeah.
I can attest. And I was on the ferry at midday. Like, there was sunshine, there was a bit of warmth, and it was still the coldest I have ever been in my life. Like, and we were stuck up on the top of the ferry, where there is nothing to break the wind. So it was just, like, straight, like, sheets of, like, freezing cold wind in our faces. There was no blocking it. And, like, watching this movie, I just, like, had a gut, like, a gut, like, reaction of just, like, oh my god, I remember that feeling. It's like, I sympathize with you both. They're the crazy ones.
And so they finally make it to the restaurant, which looks like it's in an apartment building.
Oh yeah. He's like, I don't think this is right. Are you sure? Like, this can't be the place. He's like, no, see the sign here.
And they go in and everybody knows Velasco. The owner actually makes people leave.
He's like, oh, how many of you? Four? Like, you, get out.
Like, you're done. I decided you're done eating, get out. And he sets them down. He brings them out. Uzo. And so once again, Mom takes a drink, thinking it's water. And it's Uzo.
You're missing one of my favorite moments in this entire scene. The waitress brings out four glasses, pours Uzo into these glasses. Uh-huh. Corey's mother asks, "Well, what color is Uzo?" "Well, it's clear." "Oh, my glass is dirty." And the waitress picks up Paul's glass, gives it to her, gives her a glass to Paul, and just like there, like walks away. All of the glasses look identical. They're all filthy.
Yeah. But so they end up eating the they have special food brought out just for them.
Something the man only makes twice a year.
Yeah.
And he's making it for Mr. Velasco.
And you have to pour the Uzo
into the
thing. But yeah, so it kind of zooms in on the dish as it's like cooking.
Yeah, sizzling.
And then the next thing we see is belly dancing.
Oh my gosh, it's so great.
So there's this belly dancing scene, which is hilarious. The woman getting all up on Paul is a little uncomfortable, but hilarious.
Right. It's just Robert Redford's face.
She was just like, I have no idea how to respond to this.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mr. Velasco gets up and starts dancing. So naturally, that means that
Corey has to get up and start dancing.
And then she ends up trying to pull Paul up, and Paul will not go.
Nope. He's a mountain that will not be moved.
Yeah. So
it ain't happening.
And then we cut to them returning to the apartment, finally. And, like, Corey and Mr. Velasco...
they're chasing each other up the stairs.
They're, like, little children. She has stolen his hat.
And scarf, yeah. Yeah, they are racing. Like, they're having a race up the stairs. She gets into the apartment first.
Because she tickled him.
And so, like, then we have them. They're just, like, jubilant, just, like, all over the place. And just, like, bouncing around. Cut to... Like, it cuts back to the door, and Paul is literally carrying her mother in the door, and finally, like, stumbles and has to, like, basically fling her onto the sofa.
And then he flings himself down next to her. Meanwhile, Corey and Mr. Velasco are like, let's go have coffee at Mr. Velasco's place, because our stove doesn't work. And, like,
oh my god.
Like, they're, like, and I think it's Ethel, Mom, that just goes, I'm dead. Like, I have died and gone to heaven, but we had to climb to get there. And then Paul goes, Paul says, to have died so young.
It was like, struck down in the prime of life.
That's what was struck down in the prime of life. Oh man, that part is great.
Again, it's so deadpan, and I love it.
And so then you have, they talk about how Corey loves living. Like, that's what Mom says. She loves how much Corey loves living.
Yes. Basically, she enjoys the fact that her daughter enjoys life so much.
Yeah. But she gets up to leave right after that. And she's like, I'm going to go home. What about, you know, they're going to come back with coffee. Oh, tell them some little lie. Tell Corey I'm not really her mother. Just some insignificant little lie.
Oh, God. It makes me laugh.
And so then about that time, Mr. Velasco, which is Victor.
Yeah, Victor Velasco, yeah.
Comes down. With Corey again, and Mom's like,
they've decided against coffee. Flaming brandy is the ticket.
Yeah.
And that's when she's like, nope.
Bye. So she's getting up to leave, and Victor takes his hat and scarf back from Corey. And says, well, I'm taking you home. I'm not letting you drive home like this. Like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Because Victor, you get the idea, either can hold his liquor better or has not had as much liquor. One of the two.
I'm sure he can just hold it better.
Probably. But so he goes, I'm taking you home, Ethel. Like, he tells her, call me Victor. What's your name? Or what's yours?
Yeah.
And she's like, what's my what? Your name, mother. What's your name? She's like, it's Ethel. Like, Mom. Corey's like, her name's Ethel.
Yeah.
So he goes, Ethel, you have to call me Victor, and I'm going to call you Ethel. That's just the way it is. We're going to spend the rest of the night together. And Mom's kind of like, excuse me?
Right.
But so he's like, I'm taking you home. And he, like, whisks her out the door. And then we leave behind Paul and Corey.
And this is when, like, the tension is ratcheted up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it gets... Like, rewatching this, I had forgotten just kind of how intense the fight gets.
Mm-hmm.
And just how... Like, for me, like, rewatching it today, I was like, it's a tribute to, like, to how good, one, Robert Redford and Jane Fonda are, mm-hmm. in that, like, they're still playing the comedy of it, but it's so real.
But it's also hilarious.
It's, like, it's hilarious, but, like, it's painfully
Which
real.
Is what good comedy does.
Yes, like, absolutely.
Like, a good comedy like this. I think that's why I don't like certain comedic things, is because it's so unrealistic.
Such
like,
as?
I do like some of his things. Let me preface it that way. Some of the Adam Sandler stuff.
Yes.
Because there's an unrealistic nature to it that where like fights aren't real. Like mm-hmm. you're not really fighting with each other. You know, that's not what's really happening here. We can all see, yeah. you know, there's several movies that do that. Like several different
right.
quote unquote comedies. That's why I don't like the frat boy comedies. That's the only way I can describe it. They're just not my kind of cup of tea because I like this, my comedy centered in reality. Like the comedy coming from real situations.
Yeah. But yeah, this basically starts off like with Paul just lobbing the grenade of, you know, what a rotten thing to do to your own mother. And then like, and I didn't get all of it down, mm-hmm. but it basically, you know, he's like that, you know, that was a horrible thing to do to your mother. Like putting her, you know, in a scenario like this, like where you knew like she was not going to enjoy herself. And Corey just kind of shoots back with, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if you're capable of having a good time. And then it devolves, like, even
comes
further.
Comes to find out he was stoned the other night and she didn't even know.
Oh, yeah, he was stoned in, like, he means drunk. Like, yeah. Terminology
has
changed.
70s, so the terminology was getting
yes.
ready to get there.
Terminology was about to shift.
Yeah.
He was basically saying he was drunk off his face.
Yeah.
But she couldn't tell, like, yeah. because he was such a... The term that gets lobbied about is, like, he's such a stuffed shirt.
She uses the words proper and dignified as an insult, and
yes.
she gets super pissed
oh,
that
yeah.
she called him proper
and
dignified.
And it goes back and forth of how, like, the difference between them being is that she's a watcher and he's a doer. I'm sorry, backwards. He's a watcher and she's a doer.
Yeah.
And the people, like, the people who watch, like, they just watch the people who do things, you know, and, you know, they never do anything themselves, and... Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, she goes into calling him, what was it?
A proper and dignified.
Proper and dignified. And he's just, like, aghast at
like,
that.
Take that back, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, excuse
and,
you.
And this goes back and forth for a little while. And, like, finally, like, she's finally, like, just lists the reasons. And this leads to, like, my favorite exchange in the entire movie. Is she's just kind of listing all of the ways how he's so proper and dignified. And then she goes, you're very nearly perfect. What a rotten thing to say.
Because, I mean, like, in most movies... That would be, like, the romantic, like, there'd be a romantic moment there of you're perfect, you're a perfect person, da-da-da-da.
Oh, yeah.
Not in this one.
But in this, it's a, you know, it's a bullet with which to take him down.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an insult. It's something that's meant to hurt him. And
he keeps trying to quit because, like, quit fighting.
Yeah, he keeps.
Because he does not want to fight when he's tired and angry. He has court in the morning.
Yeah. It's like, and I've got a court case tomorrow.
So he keeps trying to go to bed, and she goes, how dare you go to bed when our marriage hangs in the balance?
He's like, I didn't realize
wait,
that it did.
Wait, what? Our marriage? He goes, this was a fight. Now our marriage is in the balance? What is happening?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
so confused.
And this is when, like, finally, like, she comes to the realization. It's like, it's suddenly become very clear to me that we have nothing in common. And basically his reaction is like, yeah, like this is not news, you know? And she, it's mentioned during this fight, like, you know, when she's talking about him being a stuffed shirt and how like he won't loosen up and like do things with her. And as we mentioned before, everything to Corey is a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's always wanting to play. And during this fight, she, like, accuses him, you know, of being a stuffed shirt, like, because, like, well, you wouldn't even walk barefoot in the park with me. He's like, Corey, it's February. It was 17 degrees. And just how, and but she thinks that that's just absurd, that this wasn't something he would do. And that's when she tells him, you know, it's suddenly become very clear to me that we have nothing in common. He goes, why? Because I won't walk barefoot in the park with you. And it all just builds to a head. To where finally...
There's one line that I gotta
talk
about,
too.
Because it's when they're talking about marriage. Maybe she's like, maybe we shouldn't have gotten married. And he says something, and she goes, what, only emotionally mature people should get married, according to you? And I just went, can we make that a law? Like, I'm on board with that. Like, there's a lot of people I know, like,
well, yeah,
I'm just saying.
Well, because, you know, because back then, this was when, like, you had to, like, you know, like, there had to be a blood test and all of that before, you know, before you could get, like, a marriage license and everything. And, you know, and he makes the point. He's like, well, yeah. And he's like, maybe there should be more than just a blood test to prove that two people are able to get married. He's like, maybe there should be a psychological exam. And
maybe your psychiatrist, you should have your psychiatrist saying that you are okay to get married.
Right.
I laughed really hard at that.
You did. It
Once
was
again,
great.
I know some people that I wish I could make that apply to.
Uh-huh.
We know some of the same people. Uh-huh. We know that.
But anyway. But finally, like, this all builds to a head. Mm-hmm. And Corey is, you know, Corey just, she's like, basically just like demanding, like, she wants a divorce now.
She wants him to get out. She wants a divorce.
And finally, it's like, it, like, the script flips, and now, like, she doesn't want to talk about it. Like, she just wants him to get out, and he's like, no, 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 like, we're gonna hash this out. It's like, well, I thought you did, like, I thought you didn't want, like, I didn't, you know, I thought that you didn't want to deal with any of this. It's like, yeah, that's when it was a fight, not a divorce.
Yeah, it's a totally different situation now, lady.
Right. And she, you know, she ends up getting, you know, kind of hysterical, and, you know, but he's willing to fight for her, but he's, like, she is not
and
going to
right
listen.
Right in the middle of some of this fight scene, we see Velasco and Mom on the front stoop.
Yes.
And Velasco offers Mom his hand, and she won't take it.
And well, like, she thinks he's being forward,
and
basically.
Goes, there's ice on the stairs, and she goes, I can take care of myself. And then she doesn't. She
immediately pratfalls.
Immediately falls, rolls down to the bottom of the stairs, and Velasco takes off, like, down there to check on her. And then we cut back to this fight.
Yeah.
With Corey and Paul. And so, eventually, she throws a pillow at Paul and a blanket at Paul and tells him to get out in the morning, you know, to go to find a new place to live. He needs to start moving out because she doesn't want to do this. She's not doing it.
She's not doing it anymore.
So as Paul is getting ready to, like, go to sleep, the phone rings. Mm-hmm. Paul grabs it, and he's like, well, I don't live here anymore, Corey, so you need to answer it. And so he's trying to take it to her and ends up yanking it out of the wall.
The cord isn't long enough, and he yanks it out of the wall.
Yeah. So they have no phone now.
So now they have no phone.
Yeah. So he, you know, and then he starts to get comfortable in bed, and it starts to snow, or in on the sofa.
Yeah.
And it starts to snow on his head. And he just has the most, like, dejected, like, done with all of this body.
Oh, my god.
Like, body language.
It's so good.
So then we see him the next day, and he is obviously sick.
Yes.
He's come home from work early.
Yeah, he leaves work early. Like, they run into each other at the grocery store.
She won't let him buy grapes with her. Like, he has to buy his own bag of grapes. That is his charge account. She has her own charge account.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I'm starting a new account. It's under Mrs. Browder. But yeah, they get back to the apartment. And this is when we have the return of Harry Pepper. The phone technician.
Who knows how to read a room.
Oh my gosh. This is some of, like, the greatest, just, like...
Once again, he's stealing the scene.
Yes. Well, because Paul isn't in the room, and so, like, Pepper is, you know, he's talking to Corey, and so he's like, you know, oh, like, this place looks really nice, like, you've done a lot with it, and she's like, yeah, I'm, you know, thinking about, like, I'm gonna move out, see if something, like, this...
Do you know anybody that wants to rent a place?
Do you know anybody that wants to rent a place? And he's just like, oh, well, you know, how's married life? And she's just basically like, ha!
Slams a plate down.
Yeah,
because she's making her dinner. She's already made it clear to Paul he's taking care of himself.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, we have, like, Paul comes in, and Paul, like, he just sits down on the couch with his grapes, opens up the paper, and he keeps trying to talk to Corey.
Like, asking her questions.
And she is 100% giving him the silent treatment. And so then Pepper, trying to be helpful, like, starts, like, relaying the question. She'll respond to Pepper.
Well, but the moment he comes in and sits down, and Harry sees them both, like, sitting there. She's sitting at the table, her back to the couch. He is sitting on the couch. And Harry's like, I'm going to get this thing fixed. And you see
him,
you see him visibly speed up. Like, everything
is
like
a lightning repair job.
He picks up the phone. He goes, it's dead. And he's like, when did this happen? And she's like, it died last night.
No. She goes, it was murdered last night.
It was murdered last night.
And
once again, Harry kind of does this, like, side eye. okay then, like, I'm gonna fix this, I gotta get out of here. Like, if he could be the Flash, he would not be fast enough for himself.
Oh my gosh, it is like a lightning repair job. It's just the fastest that anybody has ever repaired a phone line in history.
Because he does not want to be here, but he, like, he's reading the room, and once again, just totally stealing the moment, stealing the scene.
It's some good physical comedy. That isn't, you know, like, falling down a flight of stairs or, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like, Three Stooges kind of physical comedy. Like, it's just some good face acting, too.
Yeah. So like, they're continuing to fight. She finally starts responding to Paul.
Yes.
Because he asks if his clothes come back from the cleaners. And so, for a second, you think she's not going to respond. And then she finally does.
Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, they stuffed your shirts beautifully.
Yeah. And so, like, there's still, like, so much tension and animosity there. But they're not really speaking.
Oh, my gosh.
So then, finally, Harry finishes the phone. He's like, okay, bye. Like, literally.
Yeah.
Like, he forgets his toolbox, has to run back in and grab it and leave. And then the phone rings, and it's Aunt Harriet. Mom never came home last night.
Yeah. Ethel never came home.
And so... Now Corey has a whole other reason to flip out and be scared.
Right.
And meanwhile, Paul starts packing his suitcase.
Yeah, and it's one of the instances where, you know, because, like, going back to the beginning where Corey is just completely, like, calm and blasé over the fact that it's going to be snowing in the living room and Paul wants her to freak out, mm-hmm. and she won't, now we have a moment of, like, Corey is legitimately freaking out because, like, her mother is not there, and like, we like, she runs off into the bedroom, and, like, he kind of, like, gets worried for a second and goes after her. He's like,
what happened to your mom?
Like, Corey, like, what's going on? Is everything okay?
Was there an accident? Is your mom okay?
Yeah, like...
The first thing he asks is your mom okay?
Yeah, like, he's genuinely concerned, but, like, she...
Once he finds out she just didn't come home, he's actually much less concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, well...
That's what you wanted.
That's what you wanted. Kind of told you so.
And
so he starts throwing stuff in his bag because he's leaving.
Yeah. It's like, she doesn't want him there, so
she told him to go find a place tonight. He wasn't spending the night there. So she runs up to Velasco's apartment.
Yeah.
And we don't see her end of it. We just see Paul packing his suitcase, like, mm-hmm. angrily. He is pissed at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And so he gets his suitcase packed and gets everything closed up in there. And she runs back in the room just bawling.
Oh, yeah. And, like, runs into the bedroom, slams the door. And
Paul has got the suitcase in his hands walking out the door.
Yeah. And a split second later... In runs Mom, wearing Mr. Velasco's robe, like his kimono.
Yeah, so she caught Mom in Velasco's bed.
And Paul basically just has this, like, I can't remember what he says, but it's basically like, well, this ain't my problem anymore, and just walks out. It's like...
Yeah, now that he, and I think if Mom, something had been wrong with Mom, right. It would have been a story. But yeah, he walks out, and then you have Mom and her, like, having to come to terms with the fact that maybe Mom did do something last night. And so suddenly, Corey is very... She didn't want this. Like, she thought she wanted this.
Yeah.
She does not want this.
Yeah, it's like, now, like, her mom has the thing that
it's not a game anymore.
For. Yeah, like, it's not a game. Like, it's real now.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we find out, like, nothing really happened. Because, like, her mom explains, like, what happened was she fell down the stairs... Victor was adamant, like, he was going to carry her back inside. They get, like, up to, like, the third floor, and, like, he falls back, like, he drops her, falls backwards down the stairs, and, like, they crash into somebody else's apartment. So then those three people
in that apartment... And he breaks his foot.
He breaks his toe. And so, like, the three people in that apartment then carry the both of them up to the attic, room, and basically just, like, drop them on the floor and leave them there.
Because he doesn't sleep on a bed, he sleeps on rugs.
Yeah, he sleeps on rugs. And so, like, and with all of the, with the martinis, the vodka, the ouzos, and everything, you know, like, her mom just basically, like, just passes out.
Yeah. So she doesn't even know where her clothes are.
She doesn't know where her clothes are. Like, she woke up on the floor wearing Velasco's kimono.
Although she's excited because it's the first night she hasn't slept on her board. Right. Because you find out she sleeps on an ironing board to keep her back straight.
No, it's not that she sleeps on an ironing board. Like, Paul makes that joke.
Oh, yeah.
And of, like, oh, well, you know, like, she wasn't in her bed. Well, you should check the ironing board.
Yeah.
So
she sleeps on a board to keep her back straight.
Yeah.
But she didn't sleep at the board last night and she feels okay.
Oh, yeah. While they're, like, while Corey and her mom are having this heart-to-heart, they hear a crash outside, and they go and look, and there's Velasco on his ass, because you know, he had, like, he has his foot in basically what looks kind of like a 60s walking cast.
Yeah.
And he was trying to climb the ladder up to his apartment, and he, like, fell. And so, you know, they go into Corey's apartment, and we have something that, like, hasn't happened for the entire, like, we have long periods of complete silence from Corey.
Yeah.
Because, like, her, like, basically, like, her entire world has, like, completely flipped upside down. Yeah. And so, it's like, she's trying to take everything in. And so, we just kind of have her sitting back, listening to this conversation happen between Ethel and Victor. And basically, like, they're both kind of commiserating on the fact of, like, they're old and they don't feel well.
She realizes he has ulcers.
Yeah.
Based on his description. She's like, oh, I have that, too. This is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he's realizing he's not as young as he thinks he is. Yeah. He's actually got somebody to come look at his apartment so that they'll rent it out and he can move.
Yeah.
Because he's
realizing...
Like,
he's like, I need a place with an elevator.
Yeah, he's realizing he's too old for this.
Yeah.
Now.
Like, he's too old for these kind of things.
But... He does ask her out.
Yeah, he asks her out for dinner, and
he goes, "But it's gonna have to be plain food. It's gonna be
bland." It's like very, very bland food. And he makes a joke. He's like, "Oh, you know, I'll see you at the hospital cafeteria.
I'll make a reservation.
Yeah, I'll make a reservation."
So he asks her out for that night, and she says yes.
Yeah,
and then so we have Corey, mom going out for lunch.
Yeah,
I think it's lunch. They're having coffee.
They're having whatever. Drinks.
Yeah, and so. Mom is freaking out. She's like, I need to go buy a new dress.
And what am I going to do with my hair?
And Corey is trying to tell her that she's getting a divorce.
Yeah.
Like, she's trying really hard. Mom doesn't believe her. Flat out. Mom laughs at her. She's like, there are no two people that love each other as much as you and Paul do.
Yeah.
Well, that may have been true yesterday, but...
It's not true today.
But so finally, like, as they're walking, like, they have this whole conversation in the restaurant or the cafe or wherever they are. But as they're walking back into the apartment... She looks at her mom, and she's like, I don't know what to do.
Well,
what should I do?
Yeah, when they're walking back to the apartment, like, they have, like, part of the conversation that they're having, like, a couple of the lines mm-hmm. that I wrote down was, you know, Corey admitting to her mom, she's like, I don't know how to make him happy. And that's when her mom tells her, like, well, all you have to do is give up a little bit of you for him.
Make him feel important when he gets home. Take care of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I wrote that right before that. She says, this is the first time you've asked me for advice.
Since you were 10 years old.
And I loved that.
Yeah.
Because, like, Corey, they said that at the beginning of the thing. Her mom did. She's like, well, because when Aunt Harriet says, every girl wants her mom's advice, she goes, no, not my daughter. She's not wanted it for years.
Yeah, exactly.
And so now we're at the point where Corey is beginning to realize life isn't just a game. Like, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people who you don't think do... know something you don't.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They can offer advice and they can be a valuable asset, mm-hmm. if you will. And so her mom gives her that advice, like, be good to him, you know, take care of him when he gets home. Like, that's one of those things. And she goes, and then you'll have a happy marriage, and not even, there are only 2 out of 10 couples.
And you'll be one of the two.
And trust me, you'll be one of the two.
Yeah.
She goes, now I have to go for my date.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. Just peace out.
So then Corey, like, has the revelation of she wants Paul back.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got to go find him. Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, meanwhile...
When he carried out his suitcase, he also carried out a bottle of scotch.
And he has given away his jacket.
Gave away his jacket to a homeless man.
And he is drinking that bottle of scotch. By the time Corey finds him... That bottle of scotch is no longer around. The bottle isn't.
The
scotch is well within him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The scotch has been downed.
He is drunk off his
butt. Well, it's like, okay, he's sick and he's drinking.
Yeah.
Like, not a great combination. No. Like, because I love, like, earlier, like, like, while, Corey's already fled, like, to go look for her mother. And, like, he's basically talking to himself, Well, like, he's just, like, drinking, like, he's having drinks from the bottle of scotch. It's basically just, like, it's like, oh, man, I'm getting cold. Or, like, it's a 24-hour, like, or the flu, or maybe this 24-hour virus, and looks at his watch. Like, oh, maybe it should be gone by 4:15 tomorrow, or something like that.
But then he's, the whole, like, death by hole in the ceiling or something to that effect.
Yes, some poor schnook.
Yeah, that part is so great. But so there he is, holding his shoes in his hand, walking barefoot in the park.
Yep.
In the middle of February.
And Corey, like, she's scolding him. And
he's like, this is what you wanted.
Yo, and, like, it's so... it does my heart so good to see Robert Redford playing somebody, like at least momentarily off their rocker.
Yeah.
Because he tends to play these very sort of, like, people, like, he tends to play people, like, they might have, like, a little twinkle, but they're never, like, fully unlaced. You know, like, or they're very straight-laced characters. They're very buttoned up.
Yeah.
Most recently, like, people might know him as playing Alexander Pierce in The Winter Soldier. He plays those kinds of characters. You know, people who have, like, a little bit of edge, a little bit of snark.
Well, but, I mean, he played, was it Jack Ryan for a couple of movies?
Yeah. Yeah, he played Jack Ryan.
Yeah, and same thing. He's kind of a, he's a, an analyst, but he's also, like, political thriller, intrigue.
Yeah. It's like,
that's the type of stuff.
Yeah, it's like that, and for, like, this movie, like, to see him just, like, be completely unbuttoned and just funny. I love it.
And so, well, yeah.
And, like,
that moment when he tries to, like, drunk him, tries to jump the
jump the bench, over the bench.
And he just eats it. Like, that's great. That's just,
it's so good. And, but, like, he throws his shoes, he goes and, like, he picks up a trash can and, like,
dumps
the trash out over his head. And yeah, and he's literally running around barefoot.
But then he stops and looks at her and just basically tells her, "So I decided you're moving out because it doesn't make any sense. Like, my name is on the lease. You have to find a new place." And then picks up his suitcase and begins walking back to the apartment.
Yeah.
And so she picks up his shoes and is, like, following him. And,
yeah.
And stuff. So and when they get back home,
I do love that at some point during this walk back, she has forced him to put his shoes back on.
His shoes back on, yeah. They're all wet, but he's put them back on. So, as they get back to the apartment, this part's kind of funny to me, because it's kind of like a reverse of the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't keep his hands off her.
Yep.
And she's trying to, like, she's like, no, you are sick. You need to, like, because he's touched his forehead and he's burning up with fever.
Yep.
She's like, you need to be in bed. You're sick. And he's like, let's go to bed then. And she's like, you're sick. And he goes, not that sick.
He's chasing her around the apartment.
Like, trying to tickle her and play with her. And
oh, yeah. And, like, just, like, eats it on the carpet. Just, like, he takes a dive for her and she dodges out of the way and just, like, skids across the carpet.
And then he goes into their bedroom and closes the door. And the next thing you know, he has climbed up the rack.
Well, while he's chasing her around the apartment, like, I do love it. And she's like, this person you are right now.
Oh, yeah, like, she locks herself in the bathroom.
Yeah, she locks herself in the bathroom.
And she's telling him she wants her fuddy-duddy back.
Yeah. She literally says, she's like, I don't like, I don't want you. Like, I want my old Paul back. Like, yeah, I want the old Paul back. And he's like, that fuddy-duddy?
Yeah. And then he climbs out onto the window, or up the thing, above their skylight.
Yeah, all like, Mr. Velasco style, climbs out the bedroom window, along the ledge. Like, she finally comes out and, like, looks up and sees him there. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, come down. And he's just being, like, so loud and overdramatic. And I don't remember where it comes in this whole exchange that they're having, but he's like everybody else in this building, I want to be a nut.
And he almost tips over backwards off the roof.
Oh my gosh, it was so great sitting next to you. Because you're like,
oh my gosh.
Like, just watching you kind of, like, tense up because he's, like, teetering on the edge of this building. And at one point, you're just like, this could take a very dark turn.
I do not want that. But yeah, so then you have, like, he makes her say something to him. And, like, she's like, I love you. And he's like,
my husband, and, like, and making her repeat, you know, like, my husband, you know, Paul Broder, is a drunk. And, it, because, like, basically making her, like, declare, like, he's not, like, you know,
he's not a stuff shirt. He's not a stuff shirt.
Yeah, he's not perfect. He's not all these things.
But I don't remember what she says.
But she says, you know, she's like, pointing out to him, like, you know, like, she adds on to the end of it. It's like, and I love you. And he's like, and his response is, you know, Corey, even when I didn't like you, I still loved you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I love
you.
So much.
Even when I didn't like you, I loved you. Like, duh.
Yeah.
And so then Corey gets hit, like, he falls.
Yeah.
And so Corey's like, Corey's freaking out.
As you would.
And she's like, don't move. Don't move. And every time she starts to leave to go to the roof to save him,
he's like, no.
Don't leave me alone. He's sobered up.
He's very quickly sobered up.
It's like, oh shit. The adrenaline just...
Oh, yeah. He's like, he's basically, like, at this point, he has his face pressed to the glass, like, around
to the hole.
To the hole.
So Corey goes out there, and he starts living again. She's like, just sing until I'm there.
He's like, okay. And she runs off. He's like, Corey. He comes back. He's like, what should I sing? And it's
when they were belly dancing.
Corey asks Mr. Velasco what the song is, and he jokingly tells her that it's basically the Albanian Jimmy Crack Corn and I Don't Care.
But it's Shamu Shamu.
Yeah. Yeah, Shama Shama Elma Kamama. And she's like, just sing Shama Shama. And he's like, okay. And she runs off. Wait, Court, I don't know how it goes. Shama Shama.
And so she sings it until she gets there and can pick him up. By this time, there's a crowd across the street.
There's a crowd gathered.
And I guess as she's saving him, like picking him up essentially, Mom and Mr. Velasco come out of the building. And she looks at him, oh, that's nice. They've made up. Just keep walking. It's like, it doesn't matter that my daughter could fall to her death right now. They made up.
That's literally like Corey rescues Paul.
Yep.
They kiss. So it's like they've made up. And then like we have like a very far away shot. It's like a shot from down to the ground. We see them on the ledge and they're kind of like walking back toward the ledge, like to be able to get back inside. And her mother just goes, oh, that's nice. They made up. Yeah. And like, end movie.
Yeah. Like, I love the fact that Mom got that last line in. That's just great.
It's... Oh, God.
Yeah, this movie was hilarious. I'm glad you got me to watch it.
I love this movie.
It's way not what I expected. Like I said, I was expecting something really dramatic with these two actors.
Oh, no.
Like, I should have known better, because Jane Fonda is flipping hysterical.
She's amazing.
I want to say the first thing I ever saw her in was 9 to 5.
Oh, God.
Ooh, and mwah. Yeah, that movie's phenomenal.
It's so good.
And so I think that's the first thing I ever saw her. And so I don't know why it stuck in my head that she would be this dramatic actress.
Well like she has.
She
like,
is. Like, don't I'm like
on Walden or on Golden Pond, not on Walden Pond. That's completely different.
That's a very different
that's
thing.
That's a very different thing. No.
This movie has made us a little slap happy, too.
A little bit. But yeah, because I went to like 9 to 5, you know, I had seen her in. I'd seen her, you know, on Golden Pond.
I've seen Monster in Law.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. But you know, I had oh my gosh, I like looked it up a few minutes ago. Oh, Barbarella.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that years ago. I didn't understand it, but I saw it. And Robert Redford, I've seen him in a million things. He's my Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I have loved the man's work my entire life. It's like, but typically, you know, he's playing these, like I said, these very like straight-laced characters.
Yeah.
And come on, like we've both watched Grace and Frankie, so like we know, like
I'm a couple seasons behind. I've got to do that sometime. But that move, that show is also fantastic. If you haven't seen it, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen. I mean, Sam Waters, I just gotta...
You said you hadn't seen the last couple of seasons, and I immediately flashed to Grace having to do a detox, and Saul going, Jesus Christ, and Robert's going, oh, he can't help you now. I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to watch it. Like, it's one of those things that Josh and I, like, it's on our list of things, but when this, I think a couple of the seasons came out at just times we did not have time to do it.
But yeah, it's like, so, obviously, like, she's amazing with comedy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this movie, it's such a joy to me.
It is such a gem. I love it.
It's so good. And, like, I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. Because I kind of wondered, I mean, you and I have pretty similar sensibilities when it comes to older, like, quote-unquote, like, classic movies.
Yeah.
You tend to lean more towards not screwball, but more, like, farcical.
Mm-hmm. I like screwball comedies, too. Yeah. It just depends on the comedy.
And I tend to lean more towards, like, the very dramatic things.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I would say I lean more rom-com, you lean more rom-drom. Like, that's...
Kind of. But well, yeah.
There's some that are fantastic for both of us.
Like, yeah, it's like, we were, like, before we started watching this, we were talking about Errol Flynn and Betty Davis in, you know, The Private Lives of Elizabeth and Essex.
Yes.
And...
I just saw it for the first time.
Yes. I saw it years and years ago. And, you know, like, most people love Errol Flynn for Robin Hood. My favorite movie of his is called Cry Wolf, where he's basically a psychopath.
Yeah.
You know.
Whereas I grew up on the Errol Flynn Robin Hood.
Exactly.
With my grandma.
Yeah. So. And so it's just kind of, you know, a little bit of the difference between us. And I hadn't really thought about it until now, like, this movie kind of being, like, an intermediary for us.
Oh, yeah.
But, my God, I love this movie so much.
It's fantastic. So, I think it's obvious that they stay together.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely think so.
Here's my question. Do Ethel and Victor stay together? Because they are almost exact. They are, like, a mirror image.
They are. I'll put it this way. I don't necessarily see them, like, staying together, like, as a couple. Because I think Corey's mom is just a little too, like, set in her ways for that to last for a long time. I can see them being, like, great besties.
I'm okay with that.
Absolutely. So how would you rate this movie?
I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5.
This gets my second 5-star rating.
Nice.
Because, like, I have loved this movie for at least, like almost a couple of decades
now. I will say that if you give me another couple of years, it might go up.
Yeah.
But my first viewing of it, gut reaction, I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5. It's so good. Like, it is so funny. Like, yes. Highly recommend.
It's if great.
I don't know if my husband watched this one, because he just doesn't do movies of a certain era.
This is true.
We've had discussions about why. But anyone else, like, if you're willing to watch a movie made before 1980,
yeah, give it a shot. I kept thinking this, like, while we were watching the movie. I want so badly, and I wanted it before, but rewatching it today, like, has driven this home. Mm-hmm. I want to see a stage adaptation of this so bad now.
Well, they're remaking everything. I would love to see a remake of this, even.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a well-done remake would be phenomenal.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
There's so many actors out there who do a fantastic job with it. Can we get Meryl Streep as the mother?
Oh, my God, yes!
I need it!
I
don't know who I want as Victor. I'm still debating. I have a couple of people.
Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline's a good possibility. I was thinking someone a bit more.
Oh, who's the guy? Oh my gosh. Black Swan. He's the guy who's the director.
Darren Aronofsky?
No, not the director of the actual movie.
Guy. I don't know. I know who you're talking about.
It's like Vincent something or another.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I have no idea.
Yeah, because, and he's also in
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I know 100% who you're talking about.
Yeah, like, I can see the guy's face.
But yeah, like, something like that would just be so good. Not that anybody's ever going to listen to us on what we should do. But anyway.
Yeah, it's like, it'd probably be like Bradley Cooper or somebody would play Paul.
I could deal with Bradley Cooper if you put, there's a couple other people I would probably do first.
I don't really have anything against Bradley Cooper, but at the same time, I'm like, you're already in a remake of one of my other favorite movies, Star Is Born, so don't touch this one.
Who was it that I had a couple in mind,
oh, no.
And I can't remember who it was. It was someone younger. Maybe someone, this is going to sound weird, but maybe someone, and I'm not saying them exactly, okay, but like Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield. Like something in that age range.
I think they're a little bit too young.
Too young?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because
he's only 25 in the movie.
In the movie?
He's 26.
He's 26. Robert Redford was actually like close to 40.
Well, but I'm just saying, it's, if you want to go, generally when they do these, they go younger, they go more to what the actual script says.
But again, like, to me, it's like, also Andrew Garfield has such a baby face.
That's fair.
That
I was
like,
just thinking someone, yeah, a couple with that chemistry, that was where I was going with that. Is those two, like, I don't love the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but those two are really good in the first one.
Yeah.
And, Emma Stone could play the crazy really well.
I just had a thought. If not Meryl Streep, Sally Field.
That'd be good, too.
Of course. We could do this all day, so we should wrap this up. Unless you have anything else to add, my dear.
I do not.
Okay, and neither do I, so that'll get it for this episode of Couch Buddies. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye!
If you enjoyed this episode of Couch Buddies, why not leave us a rating and review over on iTunes? And while you're at it, don't forget to hit the subscribe button on your podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us by searching on social media. We're Couch Buddies Pod on Facebook and Twitter, on Tumblr at couchbuddies.tumblr.com, and you can email us at couchbuddiespod@gmail.com.